Hi, and welcome to the Responsible Management Podcast from the University of Bradford School of Management. My name is David Spicer. I'm the school's Director of Business and Community Engagement. Delighted once again to be hosting the podcast. Today we're talking about how an MBA can impact on your business, and delighted to be joined by two great contributors. Carl Baz is a student of the MBA at the University of Bradford and winner of the 2025 Startup of the Year at the Amber and BGA Excellent Awards for his business Deep Blue Tech, whose AI drown detection system represents a groundbreaking leap in water safety technology. We're also joined by Dr. Nick Snowden. Nick is the MBA director here at the School of Management and has a career where he started as an entrepreneur and progressed to sharing his time between his business interests, education and teaching across universities and colleges, and most latterly here at Bradford. Welcome both. Great. So our focus, our topic is responsible management. So the question we always ask everybody first is, what does responsible management mean for you? Carl, perhaps you'd like to go first.
So for me, it's probably all about balance and accountability. It means that as business leaders, we're not just chasing profits or growth. We're also considering the impact of our decisions on people, maybe even the planet. And in practice, I think this is just about making sure that everything we do aligns with our core mission. So for example, at Deep Blue, our core mission is preventing drownings and saving lives. And it's about asking questions like, is this decision good for our customers, good for our team, good for the community? Not just, is this good for our bottom line? And being ready to adjust if the answer is no. I think it also means taking a long-term view. So Luke, Lara, and I, my co-founders, we're not really interested in quick wins that compromise on safety or ethics. We kind of want to do the company to do well by doing good. So we emphasize things like building trustworthy AI systems, treating our team members fairly, treating lifeguards well. So I guess responsible management is all of those choices. It's making sure we kind of leave things better than we found them.
Brilliant.
Everything Carl just said, really. I think the thing that strikes me as the most challenging part of it is that long-term view. And responsible management for me is about very much focusing on that long-term view and so driven towards the needs of the immediate environment, making profit this year, margins now. And we lose sight of what that is doing to people in our organizations and the ones that we deal with, the planet, and our chance of making profit in the long term. And that's, you know, I know the long term is shorter than it used to be, but, you know, we have to be looking 5, 10, 15, 50 years ahead, not just towards the end of this financial year.
Definitely. And I guess, I mean, you said a bit about the business already, Carl, but the goal of the business, there's a clear responsibility there. This is about building a societal good, isn't it, through the technology. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
As far as the benefit for society goes, I don't know if it gets any better than we are trying to save lives, right? It sounds a little bit canned, but that's really what drove us in the first place. So my partner Luke owns a very successful company that trains lifeguards and has a lot of large-scale kind of contracts with the governments and other large institutions here. And the horror stories I hear from him are chilling. So the number of drownings per year in a country where I felt, you know, this doesn't ever happen, or the number of accidental drownings, or just people drinking on the beach and getting in trouble. And I think that was his impetus. That's what he wanted to accomplish when he started his own company. And then as he realized that, you know, lifeguards only have two eyes and they blink sometimes, so we need a bigger solution. And that's when him and I got along to try and build an AI behind that to sort of help all of these lifeguards.
So is it a sort of, I mean, pardon my ignorance, a poolside system? Is that the plan?
Not just pool. So like, imagine it's a busy day on the beach, right? So the system is basically an extra set of eyes that just never blink. So there, it's an AI-powered computer vision system that we hook up to existing CCTVs or dedicated cameras. It overlooks the water. And then the software tracks basically every person in the pool or the sea in real time. And the AI has been trained on what distress looks like. And we also use a proprietary mathematical model that we kind of came across because we hadn't really developed computer vision models before and hadn't learned the right way to do things. So now we like use this model to augment computer vision and we have a very high accuracy rating. And then when the AI detects something that looks like a potential drowning, it'll just immediately send an alert to the lifeguards on duty. So in our trials with the government, we have had lifeguards wearing smartwatches. The smartwatch will buzz with an alert and then the screen on the watch will sort of highlight the exact location of the issue. So a lifeguard might get a vibration and then glance at their watch and it'll say something like, you know, swimmer in zone B, grid 12 needs attention. So even when the beach is overcrowded, the lifeguard will know instantly and exactly where to go.
Regular listeners will know we've had several conversations around AI here and they very rapidly turn round to sort of the rise of the machines and visions of Arnold Schwarzenegger bursting through police officers' front doors. It's AI as a tool for good, isn't it? I guess that's the link back to responsible management as well.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you're right. AI does get bad rap sometimes. So people hear AI and they might think of, you know, Terminators or Big Brother surveillance or even simply just machines taking everyone's jobs, right? But I mean, from day one for us, we kind of wanted to flip the narrative on that and to show that AI can be a force for good. In our case, you know, like I said, it's about saving lives. So I don't know if you can get any more positive an application than that. And this ties into responsible management because it was a conscious decision on our part to develop technology that has societal benefits. So, you know, we also approach AI development very thoughtfully to address like all of these common fears. For example, one concern people have is that AI will replace humans. In our project, we made it clear to our team, to clients, that we've built an AI lifeguard to augment the abilities of lifeguards. And we're trying to empower them. Our system doesn't shout at the drowning person, tries to save them. It alerts a human lifeguard who then takes action. So it's kind of a collaboration. And like the privacy or the creepy factor of the AI, we tackle that by just being transparent. The cameras are there to watch for safety. We're not doing facial recognition. We're not interested in who you are or what you look like. It's just the AI cares if you're safe in the water. So that's also, I guess, tied back to responsible management.
Yeah.
Is there a risk, Carl, that the behavior of the lifeguards changes? I mean, do they... This is in practice now, I guess, and you're using this in different locations. How's their behavior changed?
I mean, I see what you're saying, and maybe in the long term we'll observe something like that. But right now, lifeguards, particularly in Dubai, have it hard. The weather is warm most of the time, if not, you know, extremely hot. They tend to get sleepy. And so if anything, it's just made their life a little bit easier now, and they're faster to react and take action. So I think what you might be referring to is on the long term, will they just get so accustomed to using the AI that they will not be alert themselves? That is a risk. Yeah. We haven't seen it yet, but it's way too early in the game to say that won't happen. But the way it is now, I more see it someone who've had huge burdens on their shoulders. Yeah. And this AI has come to just lift that and allow them to do their job at 100% for a change.
So maybe AI needs to be watching them at the same time on a slightly different algorithm.
I was going to say it does to an extent in that it also understands how many lifeguards and adults and children are in a location and tries to develop a risk rating. So, you know, are there sufficient lifeguards or not on location is something that the AI also measures.
So that's the interesting thing, because there's then a broader thing, isn't there, about how we're using the technology generally to manage and mitigate risk in different settings. And it's a kind of great example of that. Thinking about, we all know AI is impacting on business, on organizations, on the work that we do. We don't know yet how that's going to be. I mean, what's your take on that? Do you think AI is going to be particularly impactful in the next few years in changing the business landscape? You're working in this space after all, Carl.
I mean, personally, I'm really excited where AI is headed in business. From my perspective, the next few years will be about moving AI from this like hot buzzword phase into a more mature, quietly integrated tool across literally every industry. So AI will kind of just become part of the fabric of how we operate, much like how the internet or smartphones did. I often compare it to electricity. Like today, we don't even think about electricity, but it powers everything. AI could become a bit like that for business processes.
Thanks, Carl. That's great. Nick, is this a theme? Does this resonate with the kind of things we're talking about on the MBA today?
Absolutely, Dave. We have a pathway through the MBA now that focuses on the application of AI, not the programming sort of training part, but how we use it. And it is going to become so integral in the way that organizations operate. We can't and shouldn't ignore that opportunity, really, because it can do things better. I mean, my sort of background is in more sort of human behavior. And, you know, my interest is in how that will change as a consequence of having AI there. And I suppose the risk side of it is about lazy thinking, the risk that we default to AI to do our thinking for us. Sadly, we do see that a little bit in work produced, well, across education, to be fair. And I think coping with that, from my point of view, is going to be critical, and a critical part that we need to help leaders to cope with in their own organisations.
It's the balancing of the making sure we're using it in the right ways and understand the risks that come with the technology and the impact that it can have. We mentioned the MBA there, Carl. So obviously, you know, we're talking partly because you got the award from Amber in terms of kind of startup for the year. So you're currently in the second year of your MBA. Why did you choose to do the MBA?
So I've been in startups and in tech for a long time. And I guess like a lot of entrepreneurs, I mostly learned business by doing. And that's a great way to learn, but you reach a point where you feel you might benefit from some, or at least I did, benefit from some formal learning as well. So I kind of wanted to level up my knowledge in areas that I hadn't mastered or hadn't been exposed to on my own. For example, I have plenty of experience with product development or pitching to clients, some finance, but like advanced financial strategy wasn't one of my strengths, or maybe organizational leadership theories. I didn't know much about that. Or I could do well on marketing, but really didn't have any frameworks for global marketing techniques that I could learn in a structured way. And I guess an MBA curriculum covers all of those bases. And I guess a big reason was exposure to these new ideas and a new framework, because when you're working in your own company, you can become a bit insular and you rely on what you know and what's worked so far. And I kind of wanted to challenge myself by seeing how others are solving the same problems. And you get to do that a lot in the MBA classes. One week you're analyzing like, you know, a manufacturing firm, and I've never been in manufacturing, or looking at supply chain, or how a multinational handled some ethical dilemma. And each time you find like a little nugget of insight that you can bring back into your own career. And then that keeps me from getting tunnel vision in my own business.
Which is responsible in its own right, actually, isn't it? That you're taking a stance as a leader that recognizes your strengths and weaknesses, and it's responsible to take the position that I'm going to try and fill these gaps and expose myself to different ways of thinking.
And you're seeing that impact? Is that changing the way you're looking at the business?
Yeah, I mean, the networking part in the MBA has been very attractive to me, right? So the Bradford MBA in Dubai specifically attracts a really diverse group of individuals who all work in my region. Like my cohort has people from different industries, finance, healthcare, energy, oil and gas, and they're all at pretty senior levels. And just sitting in a classroom with them and hearing their perspectives is incredibly valuable. So learning from the peers is kind of, this was a perfect setup for that. And I guess on a personal level, a big takeaway is that I get a bit more maybe confidence and clarity. So like when I'm tackling a problem at work and I have a new concept or a new tool that I've learned and I find myself applying it, it gives you more confidence in the decisions that you make, because there's a framework somewhere that someone has worked on a lot that you're now using, and it's corroborating what you think is the right decision or challenging your decision. So I guess confidence was one of the things that I saw quite quickly.
That's a good to hear that, Carl, because that's, you know, a big part of an MBA. It's confidence that you've got the toolkit that you need to do your work better, but also I think there's a sort of personal confidence that you're equipped to face any sort of situation, go into any sort of meeting, and you've got the background, you've got the core knowledge that you need to understand any organizational topic.
I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Knowledge Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects, where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic, where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's BACE, B-A-C-E, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you, and now back to the podcast. It's that thing about the MBA, taking the specialist and turning them into the generalist. I don't know if I like that as a mindset, because it kind of implies that you were too narrow and not broad enough. Yeah. But actually, I think what it does is it means that you can have meaningful conversations across the whole business. You can look at a balance sheet and understand that. If you didn't know that before, you know if your marketing department are talking sense in a kind of corporate sense as well, and you can evaluate the kind of the whole business offer much more effectively, hopefully.
Yeah, and you're aware of your blind spots. You know, you know what you don't know, rather than just blundering on through.
But also, I would say that I was a generalist before I joined the MBA. And I think what it did is make me a more competent generalist, right? Just because I had done something before and it had worked, or, you know, I had learned from a series of failures, doesn't necessarily mean that I know why it worked. And then when you go into a class and you have a framework that sort of validates that, and you can point the figure and say, well, that's why that worked that one time, I think it just makes you more competent.
Brilliant. And in terms of that framework and that learning, obviously you're bringing that big back to the business. What's been the biggest learning point or points from the journey with Deep Blue Tech so far?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about just like the startup journey, I think maybe the biggest learning you get there is maybe the power of a complementary team, if we're talking about Deep Blue specifically. Because I have two co-founders and they both have a very strong and separate set of skills, and we kind of all complement each other. So my partner Luke is a specialist with water safety, and my partner Lara is a specialist in marketing and communications. And I think maybe a huge learning from building a tech company is build a complementary team to start. And I guess maybe also startups teach you a lot about how to navigate stakeholders and the ecosystem that you operate in. So we deal with public safety, which means we had to work very closely with the government, with regulatory bodies, big organizations. And, you know, it was a reality check, because you have to earn trust, you have to earn buy-in, and you kind of learn how important it is to speak the language of whoever you're dealing with. But that's the beautiful thing about startups, right? They just expose you to so many new scenarios, and then you take something away from each one of these and become, you know, a more competent leader.
Brilliant. And there's a wider point about learning and development there, isn't it? You're making the case, I think, for you thinking in developmental terms about your own experiences and what you kind of learn from. I guess the MBA gives some structure from that, but is that something you're thinking consciously about?
Yeah, I mean, Nick said it well when he said you kind of now know what you don't know. And that's extremely helpful. And I think in tech, and actually in any field, if you stop learning, you pretty much start falling behind immediately. So I personally take continuous learning very seriously, and I try to instill that in everyone that I work with. Like on a personal level, this means that I'll carve up time to read, to educate myself, keep up with the latest research or business management ideas or leadership podcasts. And doing the MBA was a big structured way to learn. But even now that I'm nearly finished with it, I know that I will just continue taking short courses, certifications. I'm currently interested in the latest developments in AI ethics, for example. So I might take an online course about that or attend a workshop soon. I guess in all the startups I work with, I've tried to foster this sort of learning culture as well. So because things move fast, if you slow down too much, then you'll just get left behind.
Great to hear that, Carl. I mean, and it's, you know, I suppose I can translate that into our own staff, our own delivery of the program. you know, we go into an MBA classroom in the full knowledge that at least half the learning is going to come from the class, not us as the tutor, because we do have specialists in the room. We do have people who are implementing the theories that we talk about. And then, you know, we update ourselves effectively in interacting with the specialists in the room, the experts in, you know, the different avenues, the different aspects of organizational life. So it's an enjoyable challenge for us as tutors to absorb as well as distribute knowledge and expertise through our classes. And you know, there's an institutional expectation that we update our classes every year, our notes, etc. I think can't be many programs, educational programs, that have the same access to cutting edge experience compared to an MBA that can be absorbed into that program and improved alongside the theory that's constantly evolving and being incorporated. So, it's great to hear, Carla, you're talking about learning and development. And this is something that I get a bee in my bonnet about. You know, I really see the MBA as an opportunity to learn. It's not about the piece of paper. Yes, that's helpful in a career progression sense. You know, I agree it's important. Recognition of your achievement, but it's the learning that counts.
Yeah.
And that learning mindset.
Two particular things that have come out in the conversation that I would highlight, and that things that I've said year on year as a program leader, MBAs and other programs that I've been involved in, actually most recently with our degree apprenticeship students only last week and the class on their final module. And the two things are time and network. So the things that you get through an MBA and any good program like that, you have to commit time to it. Yeah. And I always say to people, don't forget the time that you've been committing, because that soon gets absorbed into other stuff. Yeah. And actually, if you want to carry on learning and developing, even if you only put half that time in, that's going to be massively kind of beneficial. But also, don't forget your cohort, the people that you've been in the room with in Dubai, the degree apprenticeship students that I was speaking to here last week. That network is not going to support you just through the program, but through, in their cases, 50 years of a career, yeah, potentially, yeah, if they use it and support it themselves in the right kind of way. And those are all kind of key parts of that, aren't they?
Absolutely. And our bigger program is the online program. And that, you know, we pay equal attention, if probably more attention, to creating those networks through online means that are, you know, robust and reliable, that people keep dipping into in future years. And of course, you said you want to carry on learning, Carl, and we are, our alumni are invited back now to take free online programs. And of course, we've got the summits that we have every year on campus. So there's opportunities to network and get that value in all sorts of ways. You know, the networking's really important. And
I was going to mention the MBA summit specifically, because we'll put some details in the show notes for that as well. And it'd be great if we can connect through to some alumni. Bradford's MBA is one of the oldest in the UK. I mean, you've talked a bit about this already. How do we ensure it's current, it's up to date, that it's still meeting the needs of Carl and people like that?
We're privileged in our substrate, the thing we work on as a tutor, is also a fantastic source of updating for us, and particularly about real world application of theory. So there's, you know, that is the steroid, if you like, that adds to the normal updating, the regular process that we all go through of keeping the material fresh through conferences and papers and through the standard academic sources that we use. But yeah, that practical application, we have our tutors, the vast majority of us are involved directly in business as well. So we have our own take on what's going on out there in practice and feeding that back into the materials that we use on a daily basis, feeding it into the program development that we undertake on a very regular basis. nothing stays the same. And as you said earlier on, Carl, if you once you stop learning, you're pretty much dead in the water. And so it is constantly evolving, constantly improving.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, both. One final question, and we've asked all our contributors over the series. Who's your management hero? That can be personal or professional, somebody who's inspired or influenced you or informed you in your career. Carl, would you like to go first?
I think mine might not be extremely famous, but I don't know if you've heard of Paul Polman. He was the CEO of Unilever for about a decade, and he's pretty much a rock star in like the realm of responsible business. He inspires because he really walked the talk. Like when he took over Unilever, one of the first things he did was say, yeah, we're not going to play the short-term game anymore. He actually stopped issuing quarterly earnings guidance to shareholders, which was like a really bold move. And basically he told investors, if you're only here for short-term results, then Unilever might not be the company for you because we're focusing on long-term sustainable growth. I think that was the first really impactful thing that I'd ever heard from the guy because it blew my mind. It was at the time when you could scare off investors and that was just unheard of. But he was really confident that in the long run, like a responsible, sustainable approach would yield results. He was also the guy who started the Unilever Sustainable Living Plan, which had really ambitious goals. Like he would say things like, you know, we want to halve the company's environmental impact. We want to enhance the well-being for like a billion people worldwide. And yeah, not everything was achieved, but, you know, he set the vision that a company should have these kinds of goals beyond profit. And even after Unilever, he still does the same. Like he started a new group, I think Imagine World it was called, which was acquired later on, but he's still on the board, which is like a certified B Corp. And it's one of the world's leading environmental consultancies, I guess, focusing on managing, promoting responsible change. What I took from him was that, you know, business can be a force for good, and that a leader can champion that, and a company can still be successful within that context.
Brilliant. Thank you. Nick?
I think other than you, obviously, Dave, to be honest, the first boss I ever had after I'd started an entrepreneurial life directly from university, then mixed into teaching. And my first boss, he was a guy called Mike Doyle, who's well in... actually, Mike, apologies if you're not into your 80s. I'm pretty sure you are now. But his style of management allowed me to, if I'm honest, transition from an entrepreneurial life that I wasn't really enjoying into an educational and teaching life that I did. And he facilitated that. He was a fantastic people manager. He understood how to get the best out of very different people. I'm not a typical academic, and I think he recognized that. Put up with my quirks and complications. I look back very fondly on my time with Mike and his support.
Brilliant. Thank you both very much. Really enlightening and interesting conversation that we've had. If people would like to contact you, how can they do that? Carl?
I think just finding me on LinkedIn and sending me a message is probably the easiest way.
Brilliant. Nick?
Safe route for me. I think LinkedIn. I'm not a big poster, but I do link with just about anybody that asks me. With obvious exceptions, Dave. Sorry.
Oh, he gives with one hand and he takes away with the other, you see. There you go. Yeah, so obviously LinkedIn, the university website as well, if you want to find Nick and myself. If you want to reach out to the school on social media, it's at Brad Management, or in my case, at Dave B. Spicer. If you want to email us about the podcast or about business and community engagement in general, it's bace@bradford.ac.uk. That's BACE, standing for Business and Community Engagement. Thank you very much, both. Thank you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please like and subscribe. Please leave us a 5-star review. I live and die by my 5-star reviews these days. Thank you very much, guys. If you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourself. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you. And then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at BACE, base@bradford.ac.uk.